Filthy Tacos here. This is Dirtbag History. I am the resident Dirtbag Historian. Today's guest, his name is Michael Ames. He wrote a book called American Cipher, Bo Bergdahl and the U.S. Tragedy in Afghanistan. Bo Bergdahl, if you guys are not familiar, was the soldier that walked off his base in Afghanistan in 2009. He was subsequently captured by the Taliban, moved to Pakistan, and was held captive there by the Haqqani Network, which is the Taliban, like basically a fucking, you know, partner gangster group of the Taliban in Pakistan and the tribal regions. He was there for 4.5, almost 5 years, ended up being released for 5 Taliban members that were in Guantanamo since 2001. Were basically like non-players, essentially. This book is awesome. I'll tell you right now. I'm not saying that because Michael said yes to coming on and interviewing, interviewed by me. I wish I could use words better. This book is so good. It's not even funny. It should be made into a miniseries. I say that multiple times to Michael during our interview. It intertwines really cool with like Bo's capture, his time captured, the internal politics of the military and how they used his capture to like try and green light missions and stuff. His dad, who's an interesting character in and of himself, he was planning. I mean, it's just a fucking crazy. His dad was planning to go to Pakistan and try and negotiate himself for his son's release. Like, unfucking believable. Such a good book. Check it out. It's called American Cipher, Bo Bergdahl and the U.S. Tragedy in Afghanistan. If you Google American Cipher, it'll come up. I'm going to leave the Amazon link down in the description in the show notes. Give it a look because it's a really good read. And do me a favor. Like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, rate and review there. And the best thing you could do if you're not a selfish piece of shit is share it. Share it with your friends. Share it with your family. Do whatever you can to help the cause. And that's it. Here's Michael Ames. Check out the book American Cipher. Bye-bye now. Thank you so much. Fade in like right now, like as we're talking.
All right.
So there's no legit mic. You know, this is Michael Ames and his book is American Cipher or whatever. Though I just did that.
Yeah. And I think if we keep it closer to 45, that's probably better on my end. And hopefully it'll keep people involved.
Okay, that's cool. So... I mean, first off, the book, it's called American Cipher. People should go get it. I'll put the link in the show notes and in the description. It's fucking good, dude. Like, it's a fucking good book.
Thank you. Thank you, man.
It's like one of the better books I've read about the war. And you're from Idaho, right? You're from...
I lived in Idaho for about a decade. And I'm from the East Coast originally. I'm from Jersey, actually.
All right.
But I lived in Idaho for about... 10 years. And when I was out there, I was in Bo Bergdahl's hometown, and his father, Bob Bergdahl, was actually my UPS driver.
No shit. Wow.
Yeah. So there was no getting around what was happening. It's a small community anyway. So everyone knew that a local kid who worked at the coffee shop had been taken, you know, hostage by the Taliban.
Yeah. I mean, first off, the way you talk about Pleasant Valley, right? It's Pleasant Valley, Idaho.
Sun Valley.
Sorry. It's fucking picturesque. It's like, dude, I want to go there. Like, it sounds amazing. It sounds like an amazing place.
Beautiful place. It's a beautiful place. And he grew up outside the town. You know, he grew up in an even more beautiful area of it, but pretty remote. I mean, his parents built this place as a horse barn. And when they first had kids, they didn't have heat in there. They were sharing the barn with the horses.
Holy shit, man. Yeah, and just the way you describe his dad, like just a guy, I don't even know how to, like, I envy that kind of like work ethic he has, just like get his job done, do his thing, be a UPS driver. He was a UPS driver. He did it to the best of his abilities. And just, dude, like the whole story of this book is, it should be a miniseries. Like if somebody hasn't optioned this, that's fucking crazy. I'm serious. You should fire your literary agent because... Like a good showrunner would make this an incredible 8-episode miniseries.
I agree with you. There's a lot to be told here. I mean, I know you're interviewing me, but I want to ask you questions. I mean, why I haven't talked to someone who's read the book as recently as you have, and yeah. you know, I'm obviously happy to hear it, but tell me what, you've never been to Idaho, I take it. So what about it did you find so compelling?
About like the book in general, or are you talking about?
Well, you're talking right now about his background. You know, I'm glad that his background came across so much that you remember it so well.
Listen, I'm born and raised in this shithole city. You know, I'm a bridge and tunnel guy. You know, I'm like a bridge and tunnel scumbag. I'm like what a sewer cap would sound like. That's me. So I can really appreciate places like that. Like it's, I would like to end up somewhere like that, like a little bit chiller, a little bit quieter, a little bit slower, because like for the last 35 years of my life, or let's say 25 years of my life, I've been a fuck, like never ending, just nonstop. It's never enough. It's never, you know what I mean? So slower way of doing things is appealing to me, I guess, maybe at this age. Cause you know,
how old are you?
35. So like at 25, okay, I was like, you know, fucking crazy or whatever, no, down to do whatever. But now it's like I don't want to see anybody. Like I just leave me the fuck alone. And I like that. It's interesting. It's like, you know, just do your job, go do your day's work, come home, and it's beautiful. And it's like the scenery
is beautiful.
You know, you can transport yourself to it, and it's like kind of calming to think about it.
Yeah. Well, I moved there when I was 22, and I grew up in Jersey, and I wanted to get away from everything too, you know. So I feel you on that. But I think for someone like Bo, you know, the main character of our book and America's longest held POW since Vietnam, I mean, I think for him, where he grew up, I think, you know, it's the opposite, right? He grew up in this super quiet place.
Mm-hmm.
He needed to get a little more. He wanted something bigger.
Sure.
Yeah. But you're right. And there were some photos in the book. Maybe you saw those. But, you know, it is a beautiful, beautiful place. And it's, It also, when you understand more about where he's from, I think you understand more about his story. It literally looks like the Afghanistan-Pakistan border. It's the same kind of high desert terrain.
Yeah.
You know, so he could be comfortable there and not think he was in some crazy, bizarre place.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I could see like how a guy like Bo, like Iraq would be a little bit more tricky than like Afghanistan. Because it's, you know, from all accounts, it's like it's two very different places.
Right.
And like just how you intertwine Bo's story, his family story, and like the whole fucking intrigue of like the big army, big, you know, even CIA, like the big like machinery of the U.S. government in Afghanistan, kind of using his kidnapping and his capture as like a reason to do ops. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, we're looking for Bo, right? Like, even though he's in fucking Pakistan and they all know it, because once he was captured, he was like shuttled over to Pakistan literally in like a week, right? Or within a week,
2 to 3 days.
There you go. Yeah, they're not going to keep him in country because they know the military can't go to Pakistan.
Yeah. And this right here that you're talking about is really, this is the crux of the whole book. This is the breakthrough reporting that separates the book and the work that I did earlier before the book at Newsweek. This what separates this reporting from everything else on this. You know, this story still. This is we're at 11 years, right? Since he was captured.
Yeah.
And 6 years, 7 years this next month since he returned home. And this story, this fact that you just said, still hasn't broken through. The fact that the intelligence was there, people knew he was gone, and they kept sending these guys out on these searches for him for months when the highest levels of the U.S. military intelligence knew he wasn't even in Afghanistan
anymore. Sure. Yeah, that's the most interesting part. And like, I'm going to jump around, like during his trial, when he comes back and he gets charged or whatever, when they bring out like the vets that are injured and stuff like that, I get it. Like, it's brutal, right? Like, it's terrible that these people are maimed for the rest of their lives and like the sacrifice they've given for whatever we're doing over there. But to blame it squarely on like this guy Bergdahl is fucking crazy. Like, it's just, it's like a narrative that somebody came up with that, like, it just doesn't make sense. And like, and it's at fuel to the fire is added, especially because Trump makes it a huge deal and stuff like that. You know, and just like the backhand, like the back channeling craziness that goes on with Flynn and like the whole thing is fucking crazy. That's why I'm telling you, a mini series, bro, talk to your agent, tell him to snap out of it. Cause it would be awesome. Like if Netflix or HBO Max, if they spent the money on this, this is how I feel like this is how you can get it out to the mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Obviously, I mean, I'm biased. I co-wrote the thing, and you know, I'll plug my co-author here. Matt Farwell is an Army veteran. He fought in that part of Afghanistan, so he literally, you know, he was in the same place doing the same thing a couple of years before Bo. I was living in Bo's hometown, so you know, we've got all the sources. It's a definitive history. That much right. We know for sure. But as far as the drama of it, I think you're right, and there's a lot of reasons why it didn't get picked up or more attention. I mean, one of them is that we had a competing property in the Serial podcast.
Oh yeah, dude. Don't worry, I'm gonna get into that. I fucking rat.
But it's a wild story that was sort of the springboard for Trump's campaign in many ways. I mean, people forget how big a part of Trump's early campaign speeches Bergdahl was. You know, people loved it. And as to your point about somebody realized this was a good idea, I think it was kind of organic. You know, I'm not sure I don't know if David Petraeus was sitting there and had like a light bulb go off in his head, but certainly at the highest level of military intelligence at that time, it was clear that it was in the military's best interest to keep looking for him
rather
than admit what the truth was, which is that not only had he been taken out of Afghanistan, but he'd been taken out of Afghanistan to our supposed number one ally in the war.
Yeah, and that becomes, you know, they kind of scratch the surface a little bit with the whole Bin Laden raid in terms of like how the ISI just fucks everybody, like fucks it's over.
Yeah.
And yeah, nobody wants to talk about the people that I don't even know what we give Pakistan in terms of military funding. It's billions of dollars a year, and how they're supposed to be our partners in this. And they're playing both sides. And it's just, nobody wants to talk about that.
I really hope that in 20 years from now, when they're writing the history books of this stuff, that people will look at the Afghanistan war and see it for what it was, which was a war against Pakistani intelligence fighting over Afghanistan. Pakistan wanted to keep the war going.
Sure.
And they succeeded. I mean, you know, people talk about us losing this war, and the average American probably thinks we lost it to the Taliban and we lost it to Afghanistan.
Right.
But in reality, we just got outplayed by Pakistani intelligence.
Yeah.
And the craziest thing, you know, there's a sentence in the book about this, about, you know, reinforcing the illogic of the whole dynamic. We were funding the Pakistanis while we were fighting Pakistani funded militias.
It's insane. That's a never ending.
It's insane, and it's never ending. It's a perfect circle,
right?
And it could go on forever.
And the interesting thing, I've talked about it with Jack too, just like ODAs, and not even ODAs, even big army and shit. Like when they would go into a FOB, or they would have commanding officers that would do something specific, you know, have a plan. They'd actually try and implement like counterinsurgency and shit, and like try and like build some goodwill with the locals and stuff like that. And then they get shuffled out, right? Because their tour is done. A new ODA or a new unit comes in, and they do things totally differently. Maybe they're not as nice, and it totally destroys the good. Like, how is that going to work?
Yeah. Well, it's like a quote that I heard some of our military sources say was that, you know, we didn't fight this war for 15 or 18 years. We fought one war 17 years in a row. Because of just what you're saying, we'd send people in, we'd rotate them out, we'd send in new people, start over again.
It's crazy. It's literally like a quagmire. It just makes no fucking sense. If you have any logic, I'm not even, don't even forget military academies and West Point and all that bullshit. I'm saying if you have any logic, like a dumbbell like me, it just doesn't make sense to do it.
Yeah, no.
And like, hey, by the way, 20-year-old kids are getting fucking blown up, by the way, because of this.
Right. I'm a civilian. I learned a lot about the military through this, and I went in fairly jaded as a reporter, but the more I learned, the more insane it was. And I mean, you're right, for military families to commit their lives to this, I mean, no wonder they'd lose faith in the system, you know?
Do you have contact with Bo at all?
Not with Bo. He's pretty much off the radar.
How's he doing?
I hear about him, and I hear that he's doing better. You know, hear he's doing better. Yeah. I mean, the guy's traumatized, obviously, you know, solitary confinement and torture for 5 years. He's going to be traumatized.
Yeah. Unreal what he went through.
Yeah. But from what I understand, and I don't think even most Americans are aware of what he went through. They turned him into a scapegoat. before even appreciating what he had gone through. You know, here he had survived the worst prisoner of war treatment since what John McCain and there's a similarity there, because John McCain and the other guys in Vietnam weren't exactly just clear-cut heroes. There was a lot of controversy over it.
Sure.
But at least the average American knew that John McCain had been tortured and knew what he had gone through.
Right.
No one even knows what Bo Bergdahl went through, and people should.
Yeah, it's sad that it's like, yeah, listen, like Bo left his post or whatever, and he was eventually diagnosed. What was he diagnosed with?
Well, a few things, but schizotypal personality disorder, which, you know, led to pretty delusional thinking.
Sure. Yeah.
That was the main one.
Yeah. When I read it and I read the account of him, like, leaving the base, I'm like, yeah, he's definitely delusional. Like, you know, he's not really thinking totally clearly. And yeah, he shouldn't have been in the army, obviously. But at that point, they were like wanted as many people as possible to be shipping out and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So, like, they lowered all the requirements and stuff. And he's obviously like a physical specimen. Like, he could fucking, you know, he could do all the tough stuff, obviously. But it was just so crazy how they treated this guy when he came back. Like, not so much, I guess, his day-to-day life, but more like in the news and stuff.
Yeah.
I get it. It becomes a political football. And Obama did it too, like having his dad there at the White House and stuff like that. That instantly it becomes fair game, I guess, for the other side. But just the way, like, you know, we're supposed to like take care about our veterans. Like, dude, it's not like this guy wanted to get fucking caught. Like, he wanted to leave or any of that. I'm sure his intentions were good, but, you know, he had a mental illness. Like, we all do. Like, we all have some sort of it. It's a fucking spectrum. We're all fucking a little weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's probably a little further out than
sure.
Person and he should have been screened, and a number of red flags were missed. It's a big part of the story here is that how did Bo Bergdahl end up where he ended up? He ended up there because the military missed opportunities one after another to help someone with mental health issues like him.
Right.
You know, he washed out of the Coast Guard when he was younger. And the Coast Guard did the right thing. And the Coast Guard said, you can't reenlist in any branch of the U.S. military unless you get psychological screening.
Mm-hmm.
And when he went to enlist in the Army, they just glossed over that and said, just like you said, we need people, we need bodies, come on in, we'll take you. Yes. And because he was such a physical specimen, because he had trained so hard, he looked great. You know, he looked, sure. On the surface, he looked like a perfect soldier. And the one part of the tragedy here is that in some ways he really was, you know, but emotionally and psychologically, because of where he grew up and because of his own personal condition, his own personality disorder, he was not able to adapt in the same way that you or I might be able to, or the average sure. person might be able to. And the Army's hard enough on the average person. You put someone in there who has different type of thinking and, you know, I think there's a lot of lessons to be drawn from it.
Without a doubt. I mean, I remember in the end of the book, you know, after the trial and stuff like that, he pled guilty. But, you know, thankfully, like, they didn't fucking go hard on him. Too hard on him, I guess. He ends up going to, like, help, like, SEER school and stuff, which is, like, the Special Forces school for, like, whatever the fuck it is. What does it, SEER mean?
Survival, Escape, Resistance, and Evasion.
Yeah, because, like, this guy, Bo, he escaped capture, too, for 9 days in Pakistan, which is insane.
He's the only U.S. government, U.S. service member who survived isolated captivity of the Taliban in that part of the world for that long. And therefore, he was a huge intelligence. He was a huge intelligence goldmine in a number of ways. But it's something, and yeah, it's giving away a little bit of what happens at the end, but he's called back to go to this classified lectures.
Yeah.
And the instructor of these lectures, who's by the way, the Pentagon's leading hostage debriefer and hostage management historian. And, you know, the guy knows all the cases, interviewed all the people for decades. He said to me, if anybody had any objections about Bo Bergdahl giving these talks, I didn't hear about it.
Sure.
Everyone, when push came to shove, everyone recognized what his knowledge was and what his value was. And they weren't sitting there parroting these Trump campaign talking points or these Fox News or even mainstream media talking points. They were just listening to his experience and what he had done. And it's just typical, you know, years have passed since this, but we've gone through the Trump era. And I just feel like so much of our politics these days is based on these buzzwords and these phrases and these concepts that sound good on social media, but they often don't have a lot to do with what's actually happening.
Sure. Yeah.
And with people who actually find out what's happening with Bo Bergdahl, it's just a shocking and incredible story.
Yeah. And like, it doesn't even give it away because there's so much fucking intrigue in this book. Cause just like the politics in the military that's going on and how it's used to do ops. And like, it's basic, like they know it and they're fucking doing it anyway. And that's what pisses me off the most. It's not like, I don't know, man. It's just, I feel like he gets a raw deal, right? Like, cause
totally.
He definitely suffered for what he fucking did, right? Like walking off his post. I mean, he spent almost five years in Pakistan as a fucking prisoner of war.
And he suffered mentally, and the guy, and look, the guys who he left behind suffered too. But I think the key point is that, you know, for a couple of days they suffered because they were running around looking for him.
Sure.
Give him that. But after a few days passed, they suffered more because higher command in the army made a very clear decision that searching for Bo was in the army's best interest, whether they were going to find him or not.
Right.
And as the days tick by, they know more and more certain that they're not going to find them.
Right.
And then by the time you're at, I'm trying to think of the dates, is a little bit of a, it's been a little while since I've looked at the dates, but I want to say on mid-July of that year, 2009, so you're talking 2 weeks after he was gone, an intelligence analyst delivers a report saying, we know he's in Pakistan now. We have all the evidence. There's overwhelming evidence that he's out of the country. He's in Pakistan. And we all know what that means. You can't go looking for him anymore with the traditional army.
Right.
She had her report rejected by her higher ups. And we know this because she testified to this in court in Fort Bragg. This is, I'm sitting here yelling about this on your podcast like I'm some sort of, you know, nut on the street corner. This is all official government record.
Right. It's literally in black and white. Yeah.
Yeah, it's black and white. She testified to this. And when she said, well, why are you rejecting the report? Her higher up said, made her jump through all these hoops and said, well, you need to verify it in this way and that. It was the first time this woman is such an impressive professional. She after 9/11 served in military intelligence all over the world, cases all over the world. She was the lead hostage analyst at the time of this. And she told me that this was, or she said on the stand, the defense JAGS asked her, how many times in your 17-year career, 60, how many years it was, had you had your report rejected this way? And she said, zero. This was the only time she ever had her report rejected because it wasn't the answer they wanted to hear.
That's so crazy to me, man. Is she was in military intelligence or CIA at the time?
Military. She's DOD, yeah.
I mean, yeah. That's so, why is it all of a sudden this report so special that it needs to get rejected?
Right, because they took him to the country that was supposedly helping us.
Right.
Because we were maybe in danger of losing the war at that time. Because Bo Bergdahl going missing was a pretty good opportunity. You know, let's not let this crisis go to waste. Let's turn this into something we can do. And I had her and other people, by the way, I had guys on the record to me back in 2014, even before the book, when I was just reporting this for Newsweek, say to me, look, it was terrible. We were running all over the desert for months. It was miserable. I hated every minute of it, but it was still the right decision. And I support our commanders for making that decision. So from a military standpoint, it might have been the right thing to do, but everyone else involved in this mess, Bo Bergdahl pled guilty. The guys who went looking for him are either still wrestling with anger or they've come to realize what happened. Everybody has wrestled with their different part in this, with the exception of the US military and the people in command. When is the US military going to admit what happened? You know, we interviewed people up the chain. All the way up the chain, we interviewed lieutenant colonels. We got quotes from colonels, but right at the top, Mike Flynn, Stan McChrystal, David Petraeus, those three men refused to do any interviews with us about this. Why?
I mean, it's real simple. Why? Because you know why? Because Petraeus wrote a fucking thesis paper about counterinsurgency, and he's got to sell that for the rest of his life because that's what's hanging around his fucking neck.
Right.
People want to love David Petraeus. I was a dumb idiot, like 20-year-old, and I read it was the 09 when Obama pushed. He had the surge for Afghanistan and around when he came into office, and he wrote a book about it. Some journalist wrote a book about it. I read that book. And it was like everyone had a hard on for fucking counterinsurgency. I'm like, guys, we're eventually going to leave. The only way counterinsurgency works is if we're there generations.
Yeah.
And like we change it into America fucking East.
Right.
That's the only way it's going to happen. And right. You have people living in mountains, tribes that have no contact with their federal government, like Kabul and places like Coast and stuff. They're not fucking talking to each other.
Right.
Why would they? It's just so crazy because you have a ton of smart people and you can't see the obvious right in front of you.
And the same dynamics that sunk the Russians. It's the same dynamics that sunk the Brits. And we knew all this. And this is also the history that Bob Bergdahl started doing on his own after his son was taken prisoner. And he realized how hopeless the situation was. And I think Bob really ends up being one of the most compelling, if not the most compelling character in the book.
100%. I was just going to get into Bob. I mean, was he seriously about to go to Pakistan to be like, hey, take me for Bo?
I mean, according to both him and his wife and his friends, he was serious, man. He was going to do it.
That's pretty amazing. Like, and that's just scratching the surface. Cause I mean, and I feel like he could have been an easy target too, because he grew his beard out and he was like kind of nicer than you'd think a person would be with his son being captive by the Taliban towards like Islam and the Taliban and stuff. I mean, obviously he's trying to do that just to like maybe curry favor and like hopefully his kid's not getting too fucked up. But it was just so interesting. I remember looking at the pictures of him at like in the Rose Garden with Obama and stuff. It was just weird like how people try to take advantage, I guess, of the imagery of it.
Yeah, you mean just to score political points?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a family who was traumatized and who was suffering. But, I mean, Bob was my UPS driver.
That's so funny.
I worked at a local magazine called the Sun Valley Magazine. Bob delivered our packages whenever we saw him 3, 4, sometimes 5 days a week. And we saw him growing out his beard. You could see the look of pain in his eyes about this. You know, it was clear. I reconnected with Bob, you know, that was 2009, 2010, 2011. I left in 2011. I reconnected with Bob after his son was released, and ultimately interviewed both parents in July and August of 2018, which was, by the way, a little behind the music, a month before we had to finish the whole book.
Oh my God.
So right at the end. Right at the very end, they were like, you know what, let's do this. And I interviewed them for 20, 28, 30 hours, most of that, almost all of that on tape. And as far as I know, I'm the only reporter they've done that with since the son was released.
Uh-huh.
And they shared everything. You know, they put trust in us to do this the right way. And I think people who have any interest or memory in this story, and certainly a lot of people out there who know about this story because of Serial, which Bob and Jamie did not participate in, it's worth checking out American Cypher and reading our book to get the story from the family itself.
100%. Because, like, we can get into Serial, too, and that rat, Mark Bull. That guy stinks, bro. That guy sucks. He sucks. He's a piece of shit, bro. He took advantage of this kid.
I mean, I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll say he's a piece of shit. You don't have to say it. I mean, I get it, right? He's like Kathryn Bigelow's guy and stuff. And Kathryn Bigelow is a talented filmmaker. She's a fucking mouthpiece for the CIA with Zero Dark 30. Like, let's call a spade here. Even Hurt Locker, too.
They both were, right? They were both implicated and it's funny how much clearer things get with the advent, as they recede in time, right? The CIA. Let's talk about Zero Dark 30 real quick. The CIA put out an internal audit, an ethics report about how their own people behaved leading up to Zero Dark 30. to see whether or not any rules were broken, right? Because it came out, and Jason Leopold is a great, who's the great investigative journalist advice. He did a lot of this research. He FOIA'd and got a lot of this stuff released. So we got to credit him. They released these reports that showed that Mark Bohl and Catherine Bigelow were giving and receiving fancy gifts like Prada handbags and jewelry. Some of the jewelry was fake. That was kind of funny, but they were invited to DC. They were bringing the CIA people out to LA. They were wheeling and dealing, lining and dining each other. And when the report was finally released in the end, the CIA had to admit that the people handling that, these media relations people, whose job it is, by the way, to massage and manage right. people in Hollywood and media to get the right story out. The CIA says, oh, and by the way, the people who were involved in this were undercover the whole time. Meaning they were working on CIA assignment. They were on a mission. I don't know the exact CIA terminology, but they were undercover. They were doing a job.
What, propaganda?
Yeah, called propaganda.
Because that's what it sounds like, dude. Like, and yeah.
and so the fact that Mark Bohl and Catherine Bigelow got Zero Dark 30 out as fast as they did shows you how well the CIA did it. I mean, the government under Obama was at least a little bit more organized. It wasn't all infighting, or the infighting was a little bit more behind the scenes.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, Zero Dark 30 is some very is some gangbusters, top level Academy Award winning propaganda.
Dude, it's crazy. I mean, listen, in terms of like as a movie, it's a well done movie. Like in terms of like it's shot really nice and all that bullshit. But and Chris Pratt looks awesome as a SEAL Team 6 guy, I guess. You know, but you watch and it's like, yeah, you know, this is, we got Bin Laden because of torture, basically. That's what it is. That's what it's fucking saying. Let's be real.
Which is a lie.
I know. Yeah, no one talks about the walk-in. Like, I know there's a walk-in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everyone wants to act like there wasn't. Like, it's such bullshit. And that's going to become, like, the history.
So one of my favorite interviews with Bob Bergdahl, bringing us back to our book, to American Cypher, was when I said to Bob, well, why, you know, did Mark Bohl come to you? Did he try to get you involved? And he said, oh, yeah, many times. He flew to Idaho. He went out there in person. He called him. Hard sell. And Bob Bergdahl is such a guy of integrity. And he's such a, I mean, Bob is just a no nonsense guy.
Sure. Straight up. You can respect it, man.
He's real intense. He's no nonsense. He's like Liam Neeson in those movies where he's going to find his, you know, find his yeah. kid, right? Like he's going to find the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said to Mark Bohl, and he said to me that anyone who's this much of a CIA mouthpiece, anyone who's willing to do this kind of wheel and dealing for the government and put out propaganda, doesn't have the integrity to tell his son's story.
I can totally respect. I mean, yeah, who can blame him for thinking that? And
that's Bob's quote. That's not even, you know, and I've never talked to Mark Bohl about this. It's his deal.
Sure.
He has said to people when the torture thing came up, you know, he was kind of glib about it. He goes, oh, it's just a movie. It's just a movie. And it's like, well, but you're presenting it as history.
Wasn't he like a journalist before this?
Yeah. And he did good journalism before he went all Hollywood.
I don't get that, man. Like I get like a journalist's job is to seduce and then betray people, which is exactly what he did to Bo. But you need to be a little bit softer in terms of like what Bo went through. You know, you can't just have 30 or 25 hours of interviews with a kid and fucking just spill it and like kind of twist like, cause they kind of twisted the story a bit too on that Serial podcast. It wasn't, you know, it's just so fucking, it's so fucked up. It was infuriating reading it. Cause like I felt for this kid, Bo, bro, 5 fucking years in a Taliban camp. You try that, you fucking Hollywood jerk off. You know what I mean? Like, fuck that guy. Fuck that guy. I hate that guy. I read that shit and I was so pissed. So pissed.
Did you know any of that before you read our book?
No, I didn't hear the Serial podcast, nothing.
Yeah. So what did you make when you say, you know, what was your takeaway from it? I'm curious about how they twisted it.
I mean, it's fucked. He's a piece of shit. It's not cool. Like, it's just the kid definitely, he was looking for somebody to like, after this crazy traumatic experience, he's looking for something bigger, right? Like his life to mean something, like everybody does.
He'd only been back for a few days when he started talking to
him. Crazy, crazy.
He's traumatized.
Yeah. And you got a guy like that who, you know, I'm sure he probably thought Zero Dark Thirty was a dope movie. He probably saw it or whatever.
Well, he didn't see it. He was in a
fucking Pakistan. That's right.
Yeah.
So who knows? He was like, yeah, we can make a movie and stuff. I mean, that's super exciting. And to like just put your confidence in this guy and this guy to just straight up betray it. I'm not saying to like not relay the story, but you ambush the kid basically.
With no lawyer.
Here's your rat. He's a rat. He's a piece of shit. I'm sorry. I'm always going to be this hard on that.
It took a long time and a lot of research for us to even finally determine that when Bo did that, it was before he had legal representation.
Yeah, that's shocking to me.
So I say when Bo did that, but when Mark Bull got him to start talking, start recording those phone calls, there was no lawyer present. He didn't even have a lawyer to tell him to do it or not to do it. Any lawyer obviously would have told him not to do it.
Right, because who knows what the pending charges are going to be on him. He doesn't want to get fucked. And it's just very predatory.
And it launched. I mean, the timelines here were so important. It literally, the first episode of that serial launched the weekend that the Army was making its decision on what kind of trial Bo was going to have. Was he going to have the trial that he should have had, which was, and I'm forgetting the Uniform Code of Military Justice specific. There was a certain kind of trial he was going to have that would have been a smaller court martial, and it would have basically made the whole thing go faster, and sure, it wouldn't have been such a big deal. Or were they going to throw the book at him and have it be a whole, you know, the biggest trial possible? And with the media attention and with Bo admitting to his crime on this nationally syndicated podcast, it wasn't a surprise that they chose to throw the book at him.
Yeah, and like, what a shocker that they're fucking releasing that the week of they're trying to make the decision where it's going to blow up in the media and make it a fucking crazy hot button issue. I mean, has Mark Bull, like, has anyone asked, like, hey, Mark Bull, how do you feel about being a fucking rat? But to like softer language than that, obviously.
We got to workshop that a little.
Yeah, totally. It's raw. That's the first draft.
Yeah. No, I don't, as far as I know, no one's asked him about it. I mean, look, I think Serial was such a, I mean, to take aside all the criticisms about it, they did a thorough job of talking to a lot of people. They aired a podcast that was so long. They lost a lot of listeners along the way.
Sure.
You know, they did, I'm not going to say all of it was bad. Some of it was good. They talked to a lot of the same sources we did. They went into a lot of depth, but I think they sort of exhausted people on the topic. And they exhausted people on the topic under several false pretenses. One, that it was straight up investigative journalism, which it was not, because Mark Bull had editorial control and Mark Bull was trying to produce a movie. That's not journalism. That's selling a movie.
Right. Yeah. That's like the worst. That's like the opposite of fucking journalism.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's the thing that often happens before you sell, you know, the documentary or whatever. You have to convince someone it's worth it.
Right.
But to do that, to leverage Serial, which people respected as an investigative reporting outfit, and to use it to sell his movie, you know, is pretty obvious. It's pretty, it's not based in journalistic ethics to be hyper diplomatic about.
That's I love that. It's super diplomatic.
And, you know, and then the second false pretense is that the guys on the ground, the lowest ranking soldiers, who, yeah, went through hell, who, yes, were used and abused by the Army, and who went through some serious shit for months that probably traumatized a lot of them. But the pretense and the conceit that they knew the whole story, big picture, is false. They only knew it from their one small perspective.
Sure, yeah.
And some of them, who, by the way, they did not put on the podcast, but who I had interviewed separately, knew what was going on. They knew that the whole thing was a ruse.
Right.
So you put these guys out there and say, well, these guys are heroes because they went searching for this kid and that's the real story. You're willfully at that point omitting a much bigger picture.
Right.
And you're doing it in the interest of selling a certain kind of narrative. I'll give you one more false pretense. Another false pretense is that the Taliban sources knew better. You know, so they kept interviewing these Taliban sources to get the real story.
Right, yeah.
And it's like, what are you talking about? The Taliban sources are not going to give you real truth. They're going to give you what the Taliban wants.
Right. Yeah. Like, you have to take what American officials say to you as with a grain of salt. You're going to fucking listen to the Taliban officials? Like, yeah, they're telling the truth.
So, you know, and I think probably the most damning thing you could say about Serial's and Mark Bull's journalistic ethics on all of this was the whole time that they were researching their show, there was a consortium of media companies led by Hearst Newspapers, the San Antonio Express. And you may have read some of this in the book. I don't know if you read all the footnotes. We went a little nuts on the footnotes.
I don't think so. Maybe not. No.
But when Bo got back, the first person he told the story to, aside from the debriefers, the first private person was Mark Bull, right? Because he was on the phone with him.
Yeah.
Then he had to do all the classified debriefings. But the whole his as a defendant in a criminal trial, he was given the opportunity to do a sworn testimony. He didn't have to do it, but he chose to do it to the investigating officer of the whole case, General Dahl, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that turns into this 270-page document, this sworn statement it's a confession. It's
right.
A confession. And by the way, if you want to do further reading, it's an incredible document. I mean, to listen to Bo tell it in his own words. And he did that in August. So he did that after he'd already been talking to Mark Bull for a while. But that sworn testimony was not released by the Army. The Army made up a rule. They said, this is secret, right? Well, so now the newspaper in San Antonio, where he was based, wanted to get at it. And then a whole bunch of newspapers joined in, the Associated Press, the New York Times, Washington Post, everybody signs on to this lawsuit to force the Army to release this document, right? The Army refuses to do it. We later found out that Mark Bull and Serial had that statement the whole time. So to add one more level to this for you, not only did they choose to look at this just one way and take the Taliban's word for it or take an angry soldier's word for it, they the whole time had Bo's confession and the Army general's assessment of what Bo said, and they just chose to ignore it.
I'm trying to, in the Serial podcast, did they say like, oh, Bo is helping them teach them how to make bombs and stuff? Was that part of it? Because I remember that was a bit of propaganda from the Taliban too.
The Serial host and Mark Bull talk about it like, oh, did you hear about the time he was playing soccer? Oh, did you hear about the time he was collaborating? And they were talking about it as if it was up for debate. The debate had already been settled by the U.S. Army.
Right.
So, yeah, that's...
And they had the fucking document too. Like,
they had the document. They had the document. They had the report. They knew that the Army had already discounted all these rumors as Taliban propaganda. And then they aired themselves debating it as if it was still a question.
Right, like it was still up in the air, like, oh, it could possibly be, which...
That might be entertaining, but that is not journalism.
Yeah, it's fucked. It's so fucked up. And like, that, you know, yeah, it's an interesting story. It's a gripping story, the whole thing, of the whole wide angle lens of it. But at the end of the day, it's a family. It's a kid that has certain mental issues that needs to get help, and hopefully he is. And it's just this fucking guy taking advantage of him. And that's what annoys us. That's what bothers me the most. Because you want to make another stupid fucking movie, another stupid fucking piece of propaganda. That's what you want to do. I know, I get it. Like, dinner parties at Jennifer Aniston's house are dope. I understand. I can see that. Sure. But like, there is a place and a time to be an actual human being.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, look, we, you know, whether or not there's ever, I love that you want there to be a screen version of this.
I want to option it. Can I option it? Let's go.
All right, let's talk.
I've made a feature length film before.
Yeah.
So I'm not totally inept.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm not just talking out of my ass. Yeah, this should be 8 episodes on HBO Max. Fucking, you know, $7 million an episode and done right. I'm not joking, man.
Look, I celebrate that vision.
It would win Emmys. It would win Emmys.
Even if that never happens, I know that we are happy and Bo's parents are happy. They told me as much, that we got the real story out here.
That's great.
And that hopefully, you know, when it's taught in school or when someone revisits this, at least we did the work and we got the real story on paper.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the most important thing. Like, they should read this book and read even Bo's, you know, testimony to the general.
Yeah.
Like from the actual mouth of it, not just like, yeah, throw on a podcast and like, you know, think like the serial one and think it's all, you know.
I wanted to show people my my copy that's in the other room.
Of the American Cypher?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have, I gave it back to Jack. I stole it from Jack.
Well, you'll have it on, you'll have, I can give you clip art for
that. Yeah, I could totally do that early. Like the first minute of this pod is going to be me plugging it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I like just jumping in and running our mouths. That's the funnest part.
I'm really glad you liked it so much. I mean,
awesome.
It's, you know, I hear from a lot of people, a lot of women especially have said to me, some women I grew up with back in Jersey, they said, I never would have read military books, but they really enjoyed this one. You know, it's like not that bad a beach read, you know, so I hope people are still picking it up.
Yeah, it's a great book, dude. It's like so much better than just, you know, like biographies are good. Like Jack's book was really good. I read his book because he's honest, man. Like he even talks about like his friendly fire incidents. Like the toughest parts that he's gone through, he talks about it. And you have to respect that because it's not just like I'm Jack Murphy and I'm Captain America kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Of course.
So I always respect that level of like honesty. And like you guys came from a good place. You acted in good faith and you can see that. There's no friends here. It's not like, you know, you're not super like soft on Bo either. You're like, you're honest about what Bo is going through and stuff like that. Honest about like, he shouldn't have been in the army. You know, he shouldn't have been sent to Afghanistan and like in a forward operating base. You know, as good in shape as he's been in, and he probably would have been a great soldier. He needed help. And I'm hoping like he is getting help and he's like living a good life now. And, you know,
I mean, he did lose a lot of his benefits because of this trial, and the trial, which was, you know, influenced by media, by the podcast, by Mark Bull, by Fox News, and by Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know, all of these people influenced this guy's life, and it's a real thing. He did not get his military benefits. He did not get his health benefits. So I, of course, agree with you. I hope he is getting what he deserves for spending 5 years in service of his country in captivity.
Right.
And I hope he's going to be all right. And I hope one day in the future, he'll go a little more public, but I think we should expect that he'll remain very private for a long time.
Yeah. And I can totally understand that. Like, I wouldn't even want to like force him. Like whenever he'd be ready to do it is when he should do it. I wanted to ask how did they re-enlist him? They just re-enlisted him while he was in captivity.
Well, what do you mean?
Cause I saw like, there was a little sentence in the book that stood out to me when they said like, he was basically re-enlisted for like 11 years. Like they extended his enlistment.
That is a very close read, my friend. That is good close.
Yeah, it was like one sentence, and because I was thinking it the whole time, I'm like, this fucking guy, he's back from captivity, and they're bringing him to like an army base to work. Like, what the fuck's going on? He's still enlisted, and then I saw that sentence, and I was like, how did that work out? Like, how?
I can tell you that I was trying through October of 2018. The book was in production or nearing production. And I was talking to his lawyers and talking to the Army public affairs people and trying to get an answer just on that question.
Right.
And the answers it tells a lot, I think. One, no one gave me a clear answer. The Army didn't give me an answer.
Huh.
His defense attorneys basically were like, good question. We want to know the answer too.
Right.
And I said, well, what now? You know, so, and basically it's just, well, he was found guilty. He was sentenced. That question sort of, and he was discharged, right? He was discharged. So that question goes away.
It becomes.
So we never got an answer. And so your listeners know what you mean. Someone changed his paperwork to enlist him for 11 years instead of the normal allotted time, which I forget now, but it was unexplained.
Right.
It was just there. And his attorneys demanded an answer and they never got it.
That's insane to me. And to just say, oh yeah, the trial's over, he pled guilty and he was discharged, makes it moot. Like, I don't think it makes it moot. I think like somebody fucked around and
somebody
on purpose for sure.
And they did it to please politics, right? To please someone. Yeah.
It's so interesting. Super intricate. I'm not even doing it to blow smoke, bro. It should be a fucking miniseries.
Thank you, my friend.
You have a literary agent, right?
Yeah, of course.
I'm the fucking step up. What the fuck? Because I can't see like Mark Boal and Bigelow. They're still trying to do this story like as a movie.
I don't know. It's a good question. But, you know, I you know, the pandemic. Look, the paperback came out literally the week of the pandemic shut down New York. So we had pretty bad luck there. So there hasn't been a lot of discussions about this.
Right.
In about a year and change. So now, but us talking about this is making me think now's a good time to talk about it. So I appreciate your, you know, your good words on it. I'll book with
10 out of 10, bro. 10 out of 10.
Thank you.
Listen, I'll get coffee on set. It doesn't have to be the director. Could I direct it? Yeah, I could direct it, but I'll just get coffee. It's not a big deal.
All right. You're invited. You're invited.
Mike, what are you doing now?
I'm looking for my next big project. I'm doing smaller stuff. I went back to some political reporting. I've been freelancing a bit for the New Yorker, mostly stories from back in Idaho. I interviewed Ammon Bundy. You know that name?
No.
Ammon Bundy, the guy who was doing the standoff with the feds. He's the Yeah. So I interviewed him about protesting masks and the whole, he was really leading kind of like a grassroots rebellion against mask and health orders in Idaho over the winter. And now he just announced 2 days ago he's running for governor.
Yeah, he's going to fucking get a ton of money. He's going to be like the GOP's fucking poster boy, probably. Don't even get me started with that either, dude. I sound like a Trump guy. I'm definitely not.
So I had to. Yeah, well, that's good. You can use that. You could go interview people undercover, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, go to one of Nicole Malliotakis' meetings.
She's my fucking congresswoman. She sucks. She's the worst.
So I'm doing like Western political reporting right now, and I'm also taking it easy for a little bit because this was a stressful, wild thing. And
definitely
deal with some family stuff. But I'm getting back into some Western political reporting, and I'm going to keep investigating things. And you know, the story I did before this started, and this whole book just showed me just how much fuckery, to use a technical term, goes on in our government and corporations. And I am very lucky that I can, for work, go and reveal some of these people's bad actions and bad characters. And if I can keep getting paid to do that, I'm going to keep doing it.
Hell yeah, that's a home run. I mean, we need people like you, people like Jack too, because I'm sure you guys get a fuck ton of blowback, you know, when books like this come out. Right. And you know what? Tell them to fuck themselves. Like, you got to keep people honest, even the big people. You got to keep them fucking honest as best as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was just talking this weekend. I went on a hike up north near West Point, and I was just started talking about how, you know what, maybe this is the time to get people back interested in this. And after the Trump era is over, and maybe now's the time. And so you're really pouring gasoline on the fire. Really
do it, bro. I'm in. I'm telling you. And like, we're getting out of Afghanistan technically, right? Whatever that means.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there'll be like 10,000-15,000 contractors there still, but like, we're getting out.
Yeah. No, there's still, as long as there's blood to be squeezed from that stone, we'll keep doing it.
Yeah. It was interesting too. I don't know where I heard this from, but like, I don't know what book I read. This might have been yours. Like, they treat like fucking Afghanistan, or they were treating Afghanistan like an advanced Q course for like special forces guys, to like the last bit of training is you go to Afghanistan and actually get some real world training. Like, that's what they wanted to like keep the motor going on this war. Huh. Are we serious here, guys? Is this what we're fucking doing? Because it's cheap enough, and like, we can hide it in the budget and stuff like that. It's not really killing anybody. Well, technically people are dying, but like, not killing people money wise. Mm-hmm. We can keep this going. Go train our new special force guys.
It's sick.
It's fucking stupid, is what it is.
I'd be curious to see that. That wasn't in our book, but I'd like to see that reported.
Maybe Jack fucking wrote something about it. I don't know. I read it somewhere. Like, that's like one of their like MOs. Like, that's one of the like plans. Yeah, or was the plan anyway?
It's gross, man. It's gross.
Check out the book, everybody. American Cypher, Michael Ames. You're a champion. I appreciate you coming on, man.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks so much.
Keep in touch for sure.
All right.
All right, Mike. Thanks, man.
All right. Take care.
Laters.